It's time to get real with Robin. Join veteran broadcaster Robin Côté and her co-hosts, known as The Collective, as they delve into subject matters that most are afraid to talk about, but need to hear. And now, get ready to get real.
Oh, your words were brutal. How could you say those things to a child? I was just 8 years old. Shut the fuck up. You're going to ruin everything for me. Keep your damn mouth shut. Wow, some protector you are. Some mother bear you are. Why did you even keep me? Why didn't you just give me away like you did with the first one? You know, the daughter you say you were forced to give up for adoption when you were younger? Oh, that's right. I served a purpose for you. We both know just how much you allowed the violations to continue so that you could stay comfortable financially. Let me ask you this. Was it worth sacrificing me, your own child? Wait, you don't have to answer that because I already know you don't give a damn about what happened and what you did. Or should I say, didn't do. You were complicit, which makes you just as guilty. Let me say that again. You were complicit, which makes you just as guilty. I was molested by my father for several years, beginning at the age of 6. Both of my parents claimed to have been molested in their childhood, but yet did nothing to change the pattern with their own child. He molested me, and she kept it quiet. Generational curses cause so much damage. Most of the time, we don't even know what happened to us as children. We just know that something isn't right. We make multiple bad decisions throughout our lives, struggling with our own self-worth and self-esteem, with no real understanding that our troubled childhood plays a key role in all of it. Then one day it hits us, and we know that we have to break the cycle to not only heal ourselves, but to not allow the damage to continue as we ourselves become parents. I'm grateful to have in studio with me today a sister warrior who went through her own journey of childhood trauma, coupled with several adulthood traumas, and she is here to share her story and to have this conversation. So, Tanya, thank you for being with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
And, you know, we've been discussing for a while now about doing a show, and you and I have been posting a lot of stuff on social media that's cling, 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 ding that bell. It's pretty close to the same experiences we've had. And that's why we decided to do this show, because we've kept our mouth shut for a long time, and it caused a lot of damage within our own lives, whether it, you know, permeates through our health, through our well-being, our self-esteem, our self-worth. And you're brave enough to be here with me today to have this conversation, because so many others are afraid to face these trials and tribulations we go through as human beings on this planet. And we're afraid to peel back the layers and to dig deep into that childhood trauma and to face it. And for that, I'm grateful that you are here, because your story is just as important as anyone else's, and we have to shed light. So again, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome.
So let's go back to your childhood, and if you will, kind of talk a little bit about what it was like growing up for you, the kind of things that you faced. And I know a little bit about your story, but everyone listening, it's time for you to share some of that with us. Tell us a little bit about your childhood growing up.
Well, I was one of four girls, and we were raised primarily by my mom. My dad was an alcoholic. He was a violent alcoholic, and he had assaulted my mom, and she told him to leave. And I was about 6 years old at that time. According to my older sister, it was pretty violent in the home. You know, I don't remember a lot from like the first 6 years.
Because you were pretty young.
Yeah, and plus, you know, your brain protects you, your nervous system. You disassociate to protect yourself. So my mom, she was, you know, under a lot of stress being a single mom, you know, four kids. And she had a lot of psychological problems, you know, personality disorder, narcissistic. She was pretty brutal, I would say, throughout my, you know, growing up years. Not very caring, not very loving, just very, you know, get in your face and scream at the top of her lungs at you. Like, she took out all her anger and frustration of her life out on us.
So she was doing this to all four of you?
She was, you know, she did different by all of us at different times, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it always does.
She always had, like, her favorite, you know, one week, you know, so-and-so's my favorite, and, you know, the other one, everyone hate this one, you know? And then the following week, no, she's my favorite, now hate that one. And so we were always in competition with one another for the little, you know, crumbs of attention and love.
You know, that just bothers me when I hear this, because there's a lot of gaslighting going on there, and there's a lot of pitting. This is what narcissist parents do. And when we're young, we don't realize what this is because we don't talk about it. And I don't understand how a parent can do this to one child, much less four, and to have her pit you guys against one another instead of building a bond as mother and daughters. It just blows my mind.
I can't imagine it. You know, I have three kids of my own, and I've always raised them to love and respect one another and support one another, you know, and to stand by one another. We weren't taught that. You know, sometimes I think even now we still struggle with trying to be happy for one another.
So how is your relationship with your sisters today?
Well, you know, sadly, I lost my two youngest sisters. I lost my youngest sister in 2006. And then my sister directly under me in 2018. So I really just have my older sister now. And me, you never think that your two younger sisters are going to go before you. And so it's been really hard.
So with your sister that is still living, do you guys have a good relationship?
There's times where it's pretty distant. You know, my sister's a little more private than I am. I don't think she's quite been through the turmoil in her life that I've been through. And she, you know, thinks that I probably shouldn't talk about it. You know, I should probably keep it under wraps. I think it makes everyone more comfortable that way. So maybe that's where we struggle a little bit. But
you're uncomfortable keeping the secrets because that's what makes you unhealthy. And the fact that you're starting to talk about things and sitting down here today is a good start for that because, you know, for generations before, as we know through history, they swept everything under the rug. You weren't allowed to say anything because it made the family name look bad. But today, I mean, here we are in 2023, and I think it's about time we stop putting shit under the rug because it's getting old. And how many more generations are going to be affected by something that happened? Because I've always been in the belief that whatever we go through as a child, it's our responsibility when we become an adult. You can't blame your parents for everything that goes on in your life when you become an adult. Yes, they played a very important role in structuring and with what you went through, every experience. But again, it is our job as adults moving forward that we have to do something different. And it really pains me when I look outside in this world today, how many generations keep doing the same thing over and over again instead of breaking the cycles. But you're one of those cycle breakers. You're doing something. And you said it just a minute ago, you know, you taught your kids to love one another and to depend on one another. And that's what siblings are supposed to be taught to do. And, you know, I have a fractured relationship with my brother. We're not close. We don't hardly ever talk. And it really pisses me off because I needed my big brother many times and he wasn't there and he's not there for me. I've said this countless times that I have always felt like an orphan, even though my parents were in the house until the day my father died. And, you know, I don't have a closeness with anybody. And, you know, until a few weeks ago, I finally found out why. And it was because my mom was allowing the molestation to continue. And my mom hates me. She literally hates my guts. She calls me a fucking whore. And she'll do everything in her power to try to make my life miserable. So I understand the surroundings you grew up in. It doesn't make sense to me that a person would do that with four children, especially, you know, women are supposed to be there for each other. So for you to be actually doing what you're doing now in this world, that's commendable because you took what you went through and you're changing that.
Oh, I want to change that. That's for sure. I don't think it's right. I don't want other girls and children to go through the things that I've been through. When you start out in a family and you're not taught love and you're not taught respect and you're not taught compassion, you know, it's really hard be able to display those types of things in your own life. I've always been that way, regardless of what I've been through. I've always had the empathy and the compassion for other people. But I'm also not afraid to tell someone exactly where to go when it's necessary.
It's a great freedom to have that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
So you touched a little bit on your childhood. Is there anything else that went on in your childhood that has affected your life and what formulated back then that created a lot of things moving forward for you?
Yeah, you know, you kind of touched on it. You said that your mom hated you. She blamed you.
Mm-hmm.
Probably between the age of 7 and 9, my mom remarried. And for some reason, and I can't tell you exactly why, I've had a couple of flashbacks, and, you know, I can't tell you who it is, but I've had a couple of flashbacks from that time frame where I was myself being abused. And I had such a great hate for this man, and I'm not a hateful person. So the fact that I had this extreme hate for him, I despised him, and I was only 7, 8 years old, my guess is that he was probably the one that was abusing me. That is going to, you know, it's a guess, but, and so because I didn't like this man, I didn't get along with him, I didn't cooperate with him, there was something with this man that just, I hated. When my mom and him split, she blamed me for the ending of her marriage. And she would tell me, the reason he's gone is because of you. And at that time, she had just had the fourth child with him. And so when she raised my baby sister, with the idea that the reason her dad's not around is because of me.
That's a lot of weight for a child to carry.
Yeah. And so what do you think it did for our relationship? She was constantly attacking me, verbally attacking me, putting me down, you know, calling me names. It was ugly. I believe that the man, you know, maybe he didn't like how I responded to him, but I don't think I liked whatever it was that he was doing to me. Even though I have no recollection, something was really wrong there.
Well, sometimes the mind is a very powerful tool and it will block things. Mm-hmm. As you and I had that conversation a week ago, when I found out through hypnotherapy that I went to my mother, there was always a block and I didn't know what that block was and I couldn't understand. It was a physical block, even in my shoulder blade. Every time I got in her presence, that muscle in my shoulder blade would tense up and I just couldn't handle being in the same room with her in that energy. And I never understood what that block was until I did the deep dive during hypnotherapy and found out that, in fact, she was told by me when I was eight, that I didn't like him touching me, that he was touching me and it was hurting me. And she totally dismissed me by calling me a little whore and telling me that, you know, I need to shut up because this is going to ruin things for her. And, you know, things she has been telling me over the past year, I didn't understand it. And she told me last year, she said, I only married your father. He was 13 years older. I only married him because I wanted an older man to take care of me financially. And all the check boxes now with this hypnotherapy and the revelation and being able to come to terms with, I've never had this bond with her all my life and I never understood it. As much as I've tried and tried and tried to have a bond with her, it never really existed because she didn't fucking care. Literally, let's just call it what it is. She didn't give a shit. I was a means to an end. She didn't have to fuck her husband anymore. Now her little daughter was being molested by her husband, which meant she didn't have to have sex with him because they didn't have sex for many years. She made me very well aware of that many years ago, that she stopped having sex with him. She didn't want to. So basically she used me in her place to make sure she kept the roof over her head. And I just don't understand how you could even sacrifice your own child that way. And with your mom to verbalize it in that manner, not understanding that she's placing those scars, huge, heavy, bleeding scars in you. I just don't grasp the idea of how a mother who gives birth to a child could ever do that. So for you to actually live with that and hear that, I'm sure that's something that's that you've heard in your mind over and over and over through the years in her presence. It's always there in the back of your mind. Am I not wrong?
It was just so hateful. You know, the look on her face, I can still see her face. I can still see her pointing at me and telling me I'm the problem. And I mean, I'm 7, 8 years old. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, even though I can't remember Robin, I must have told her at the time what was going on, you know, even though I can't remember it.
Well, it's a block and your mind is protecting you. And you and I have talked about hypnotherapy and you said you may but may not. And I get it. It's a very personal journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very harsh one when you find out the truth. I'm 55. You're in my age group. And I found out 3 weeks ago. And same thing, 8 years old when that conversation happened. My mind has always had that block. And it's amazing how powerful our mind is when it's going through things like that to protect us.
And I can't imagine being in your position, though. I can't imagine... Gosh, I think, you know, maybe I'm afraid to do it. I can't imagine when those actual pictures come to your mind and you are sitting in a movie, if you will, of your life, of your childhood, and you're watching what happened to you. I can't imagine. You're so strong. I can't even imagine.
I wasn't that day.
Oh God.
I was actually sitting here in studio on the table where you are, had my laptop out and was, and I had no idea. I mean, I've been hypnotized many times before and have done things. And this was just, I had been on a show with this lady and she got a copy of my book and she wanted to do this for me. She had no idea what we were about to get into. I had no idea. And I didn't even feel like I was hypnotized, but to see this journey and going back there, I mean, she took me to a memory at 9 years old. And that one I do remember in the conscious mind. I remember that very well, where I overheard her on the phone talking to her friend about giving her baby up for adoption, the daughter that was born before me several years before she got married. And she yelled and screamed at me, told me that I had no fucking business telling anybody this. I was repeating it to my girlfriend across the street. We were just little kids, 9 years old, and she got angry at me. So I remember that very vividly in the here and now. But then she took me back to that 8 year old and I saw it all. And I literally lost it. I couldn't believe I was just in tears. Snot was running down my nose. And I'm like, under hypnosis. So I don't have a Kleenex. I'm not grabbing for it. I'm under this spell and I'm seeing this like a movie. And it amazed me because she took me back and she made me the adult version of me standing beside that child. And I got the opportunity to voice to her as the adult protector of that child what she did was wrong. And I swear for like 10 minutes, that inner child was in a rage and, man, just blubbering and just letting her know how upset and angry I was that she didn't protect me. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen with all of that. But there's such a sense of relief knowing the truth. And there's so many different types of modalities that people can use to dig deep and go back into this. Therapy is a great one. Hypnotherapy is another one. There's so many things you can do to help yourself get through this journey of childhood trauma. And I understand, you know, like hypnosis might be a little scary for some people, but for me, it was revealing enough to me to help me get on that healing journey, because even though my mother lives with me, which is very difficult, I am doing my best to avoid being within that space with her as much as possible. She's a narcissist, first of all. She attacks me every chance she gets. She's trying to get family to be the flying monkeys. So I come home from work and I go in my room and I stay there. And then I make sure I'm not home for dinner. I cannot sit at a table with her knowing what I know now, because I can't voice it. I can't voice it to her. I can voice it here on the show because that's my safety net. And I don't care who out there hears this, because my job on this planet is not to hide shit. My job on this planet is to put things out. You know, you and I talked about this, Tanya. Why do we go through this shit and we're still standing if we're not going to share this to help other people, to let them know, look, don't stay in the fucking dark. You don't have to live your life in the dark. You can come into the light. You can get rid of this shit that's been holding you prisoner for so long.
Yeah, I heard distinctly from God that you've been through what you've been through because you're here to share your story. You're here to tell people what happened to you so that other people know they're not alone. And that's when I decided to do my film.
And you have a big purpose. And I want to kind of go back, if you want to touch on this. I know we were talking about it off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the relatability that we have around the same age that an experience happened to you. And if you're willing to share that, I would like you to do that.
Yes. This is a memory that I vividly can remember and is extremely painful. So I'll do my best to get through it. But I was 17 years old. I was at a party. You know, it was the 80s. We wore mini dresses and stilettos, did our hair crazy, you know, had fun. And I had never been with anyone in a relationship. And I met a friend of a friend's, and we were talking, and, you know, at the time I smoked, so he was like, hey, you want to go out and have a cigarette? I'm like, sure. You know, went outside to have a cigarette sitting on the tail end of his, like, camper trailer kind of truck, and next thing I know, it's starting to rain, and he's like, here, let's get inside, and we can just, you know, we can hang the cigarettes out and finish smoking them before we go in. I'm like, okay, cool. It wasn't about the cigarettes. I learned quickly. And even though I said no, he pushed his way through my defenses. And sadly, you know, I was raped and, you know, got out of that trailer, went inside, you know, still in shock, and got a ride home, went into the living room, told my mom, you know, I was just raped. Well, look at you. What did you expect? Look at the way you're dressed. Not, do you need to go to the hospital? Should I call the police? Are you okay? She told me the same exact thing he said to me. Look at the way you're dressed. This is why it's happening. So in one night, I'm violated twice. Violated once by a stranger and violated by my protector. And I went to my bedroom and I just cried myself asleep, having visible wounds. And I would lose my mind if somebody did that to my daughter. I would absolutely lose my mind. The cops would be called. She'd be at the hospital. I'd be at that person's front door if I knew who it was.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But to tell your daughter, who's 17 years old, that she brought the rape on herself. Who does that?
My father did that to me. And people who have listened to this show have heard that story, that when I was drugged and raped at 17 and came home, my father said, "Did you drink any alcohol?" And I said, "I had one sip of a beer." And he goes, "Then you deserve to be raped." And my mother sat on the fucking couch and said nothing.
Oh my God.
Nothing.
So you know that.
I understand that.
That deep.
Yes.
Seated. I can't even, pain's not strong enough. It's not a strong enough word. Hurt's not a strong enough word. It's devastation. It's
soul shattering.
Yeah.
And that's not even something I would have thought of as a teenager, but as an adult, it shatters everything.
It's so weird. Because about 8 years ago, a friend of mine sent me a picture of that night. He didn't know what had happened to me that night. And it just so happens that in the picture is my friend, him, the guy who abused me, and me. And it was just prior to us going outside to have that cigarette. And I sat there and I looked at her, me, her. And I studied it. I wanted to know, what did that girl look like before she was shattered? And I'm like, man, she was so cute. She was such a cute little girl, you know?
And emphasize right here, she's saying little girl.
Yeah, I was a minor.
You were somebody who still had your virtue intact.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted it intact. I wasn't the type of person that went around sleeping around with people, and I wanted to get married and, you know, someday. And what's crazy, Robin, is how we handle things after that type of abuse. Because I no longer felt worthy. I no longer felt, it's so hard to say. It destroyed me. I no longer cared. I'm like, I held on to this all my life, you know, saving it for someone really special. And the flip of a switch, somebody thought that they had the right to take my body when I said no. I even told him, you know, I've never done this before. I don't even know you. I don't want to do this. And it didn't matter. So after that, I just didn't care anymore.
Right. It was like, who gives a shit?
I don't even give a crap anymore. And then you get labeled a whore. I'm far from a whore. I didn't know how to handle. You know, part of me, I think, was scared to ever say no again. Because if I don't say no and I go along with it, then I'm in control, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I didn't like somebody else having my life in their hands. That was mine. You know, it wasn't for anyone else.
Now, I don't know if you felt this way, but since I didn't have those connections with my parents and then the rape and not being heard, I existentially, outside of my body, would allow people to have sex with me because they tell me they care about me, they love me. It was me allowing them to take that from me, because in a distorted way of thinking, if someone said they loved me and cared about me, I thought that that was okay, even though I didn't understand that that was all wrong, that I should have done better for myself not to allow everybody to have a piece of me that way. And I didn't understand that for many years. I thought friends with benefits was great. I thought it was okay. I didn't have to worry about all the relationship bullshit. We were good friends. We could hang out. We could fuck once in a while, and it was no big deal. But then when you get to be this age and you start looking at things, you're going, why did I do that to myself? Well, that's because we don't love ourselves, because our parental units don't love us.
Was I supposed to feel worthy after being raped? I didn't feel worthy anymore. I didn't feel in control of my body or myself anymore. It's the saddest thing, Robin, and I know that we've talked about this, and sadly it happened to you too, but I don't know one woman that hasn't been raped. Not one. I can't tell you one woman that I know that hasn't been raped. That breaks my heart. You have a society of shattered women. And it's not okay. You have a society of shattered children. It's not okay. You know? And then you want to label her a whore. And you want to, you know, I can't tell you the stuff that's been talked about me over the years. While I'm trying to battle through being raped and having no support, being told it was my fault. You know, I was lost forever, Robin, it seems. I mean, that was 17, and it wasn't until I was about 45 that I started going, whoa, wait a minute, something's really wrong. You know, that I started coming to and having an awareness, but there was so much abuse and violation that happened between 17 and 45.
Well, take us there. Tell us a little bit about that journey as well, if you can.
Yeah, that's tough. That one's really tough.
Well, I'm right here with you, sister. This is a safe place. And if you need to check out on this, you don't have to talk about it. I just want people to understand that you've done a lot of work and you are a warrior, and that we're all the work in progress.
Yes.
And no matter what we find out about ourselves and what we learn, we tend to get it eventually that what happened to us is not necessarily our fault, even though we made decisions that we could have made differently. But because of things that happened to us while we were growing up and the lack of support that we needed from people that were supposed to be those guardians, we make bad choices. We end up with not so good people in situations in our life. And there's so many of us that have been through that. So if you want to share, you can share whatever you want. If you choose not to, you don't have to. You know that.
Well, I did want to, when you were talking earlier, I did want to say, when it comes to narcissistic mothers, have you not seen and felt the jealousy, the envy? I think that kills them.
Mm-hmm, it does.
You know, and my mom, I think honestly that night that she just told me, well, look at you. I think she was jealous. It was really weird. And I'm like, she couldn't support me because of her jealousy. And of course her, you know, mental issues. But I was working at a manufacturing plant, and it was, I think it was like 1989. And this new guy came into the plant. He started working there, and all the girls, you know, just thought he was the greatest thing, and, you know, talking about how cool he was, how funny he was, you know. And, you know, I partied a lot, you know, I have to say, through my teenage years and my 20s. I really did. You know, that was my coping skill, drinking.
Right.
Right. Plus, my dad was an alcoholic, you know, so, hey, you know, we always had it in the house. So he started working there, and my friends, you know, hey, let's go to this party, let's go to that party, you know, and I would see this guy there, and he made my skin crawl. Honestly, he just made my skin crawl. I could see where he was a cute guy, you know, dimples, beautiful smile, beautiful blue eyes, you know, great build. He was a cute guy. But, you know, but he was tattooed head to toe, and I have a lot of tattoos too, so I'm not downing on tattoos. But I'm just saying, I kind of like, ooh, you know.
Bad boy.
Yeah, I was kind of like, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
And at that age. And so, of course, all my friends liked him, but he didn't like them. He liked me because I was the one who was, like, repelled by him.
Oh, you were the challenge.
Correct. Right? But quite honestly, I just, my gut was telling me no, no, no.
God damn it. And we ignore the gut, don't we?
We ignore it all the time, right?
Damn. I know.
So one of my friends lived across the street from me that was working there with me. You know, we grew up together and we both working at the same place. And this guy would go to her house. Well, he would come over, they would come over across the street to my mom's house. And my mom's like, I don't know why you can't see that that guy likes you. And I don't know why you think you're so much better than everybody else. Yeah, he had a rough past, but everyone can change. Right?
Right.
So I was guilted into dating this guy.
By your mother.
Correct. Guilted into giving this guy a chance, right?
Wow.
Yeah, guilted. And I'll tell you what I learned after the fact. But for now, I'll continue on with this story. So I started dating him, and within months, I could see that he was extremely psychotic. I mean, crazy. Like, scary crazy. And I told him, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want you to, you know, leave me alone. You know, I shouldn't have started dating, you know, shouldn't have gave you a chance in the first place because I already knew better. And I went outside, and all of my tires were slashed.
Damn.
And every window in my car was busted out. Mind you, I was a single mom of one at the time, trying to make it, just trying to get by. And it wasn't until I got the tires and the windows fixed that I was driving my car to work that I realized he had cut the brake line too.
Holy shit.
You know? So, yeah, it was crazy. But, you know, every time I would tell him I don't want to do this anymore, well, then it was, well, I'm going to kill your dad.
So you kept going back?
Yeah, I was scared to death.
Wow.
You know, he was violent. You know, he was, you know, a couple of times he had come to my house covered in blood. And I'm like, not knowing what the heck happened. But just to know, oh my God, he's not a safe guy. He's just not a safe guy. You know, God knows what he was doing. But, and then he would tell me, well, I know where your dad lives. He's an alcoholic. I know he sleeps with his front door unlocked. I will go in there and cut his throat.
That's some messed up shit right there.
Bad. It was very, 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 very bad. And just think of the you know, I didn't realize until later, you know, that he had, you know, fractured my neck, and eventually it gave way, you know, that he had broken my nose in two places. Because when you're in the middle of such abuse, you disassociate for starters. But I had a baby, you know, I had a child. My focus was on that child, you know, because that's what good mothers do. They care about their children.
Unlike our mothers.
Right.
Right.
Right. So it was a very bad situation, and people just kept going, you know, well, she's stupid. She keeps going back to him. And you don't tell people, well, he's threatening to kill my dad. Well, he's saying that, you know, if I don't come back, he's going to burn my sister's house down, you know. And mind you, my younger sister did take me in at one point, and he did set a mattress on fire outside of her townhouse. So he was, you know, trying to kill us.
And of course, no family support to help you other than your sister. Nobody to really understand what you're going through. It sounds like you couldn't even talk to anybody about what was happening.
I couldn't, you know, because you have this person, you know, I was young and it was like 5 years after the assault, and I was young and I was scared, you know, and I could tell he was capable of hurting someone. Like I said, you know, I'd already seen him in a terrible mess before, once or twice. So I'm like... but my sister was badass because she was just like, I don't give a crap. You come stay here. You know what I mean? I'll take care of this, you know? And she did. He did shoot out her car windows too.
Damn.
Yeah. So every time somebody would help me, something bad would happen to them. Every time I would try to leave, there was a new threat. You know, and this went on for 5 years, the abuse, you know, the threats. I can't remember everything that happened right now, but it was a very, very bad situation that it did leave me with a broken neck and my nose broken in two places.
So how did you eventually get away from him?
That was by the grace of God. Literally by the grace of God. Because I was exhausted, Robin. I was tired, you know. I didn't want to do it anymore. It was 5 years of that.
It was like, I'd rather be dead. I don't care. I'm done.
Correct.
Yeah. And it's sad that we have to get to that point of that. Because, I mean, I think you would agree with me. If we had a different type of upbringing, and again, this isn't bagging on our parents, guys. Just understand this. We're working our way through these things and we're understanding what's made us who we are and why we've gone through what we have and how do we break it down, deal with it, and figure it out. But not having that parental unit helping in our self-esteem and our self-worth and
support.
Exactly. You know, we don't think we're worthy of any type of love except for, you know, what portrays itself as love, even though these are not so good people. My son's father, when I was with him, I was hit 3 times in the whole time we were together from 15 to 20. He hit me 3 times. 3 times is too many. But if he had drawn my blood like he did the last time, much earlier, I would have gotten away because I saw things a lot clearer. But the emotional abuse suffered at his hands, the sexual abuse, forcing me to have sex all the time when I didn't want to, and not really understanding what was going on. Because again, you're not coming from the right place as a child with loving parents teaching you that you deserve all the good things in this world, that you deserve to be loved, you deserve to have love in the right kind of love. We gravitate towards the wrong kind of love.
Well, what did our brains form around?
Yeah.
You really have to go back. I mean, and this is why we're having this conversation. You have to go. People go, oh, you're bagging on your parents. You're talking about your childhood again. No. Listen, where do you think our ideas about ourselves were formed? Where do you think our ideas of love came from? If you're being neglected at home, and the only time you get any attention from your parent is when they want to tear you up. And then you sit back, and I was blown away because my mom sat back after all that happened, and I would hear her talk to people. Gosh, I just don't know how she ended up with a guy like that.
Oh, man.
Oh, you mean not by you? I almost felt like I was sabotaged. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Almost like she was like, yeah, you know, get it. Because she was always telling me that I thought I was better than everybody else. But that wasn't the case. I just had my boundaries and I had my gut that would tell me things about, you know, that's not a safe situation, you know. And I was exercising my right to say no, and, you know, that's not for me, and this doesn't feel safe. And, you know, but that was always in her mind, me thinking I was better than everybody else.
That's sad. If that's what she's qualifying that as, that's pretty fucking sad, because how could you think you're better than anybody else when from the very beginning in your formative years as a child, you're being told you're worthless?
I really think it became a jealousy thing, Robin, as I got into my teenage years. I was pretty cute, you know, I'll have to say that, you know, I was pretty darn cute. And I really think it just became a, you know, you think you're too good for everybody else, you know, someone needs to take you down a notch.
But to even think that or even verbalize it to your child, that is just absolutely gut-wrenching and pathetic, because that's not what your job is as a parent. And, you know, the more and more I get into this stuff from the childhood journey, I've kind of coined my parents as the sperm donor and the receptacle, because that's exactly what they are. She was the incubator for me and she never gave me a chance. And, you know, having flashbacks into my childhood and being cast aside for everyone else's children that she took care of, she became a nanny and brought kids into the house. I know I was molested for at least 2 years. I don't know how much longer it went on after that, but to have that revelation and to understand all the things that were said, I mean, even something as simple as this, my father said before he died, which sticks with me now, my son's father and I were dating, and he was living in his car because his grandparents threw him out because he was getting into trouble. He was living in his car. He was 5 years older than me. So my father fixed up the garage, closed it in, and it was a big room where my brother and my ex-husband shared when we were dating. And he would sneak into my room at night and have sex with me. And here I was 15, 16 years old. My father said something to me before he died that really hits home now. He said to me that he didn't have a choice. He had to let Mike move in. Otherwise, Mike would call the police on him. I never understood what that meant. But when I was going to marry my son's dad, he said something to me that I was not a virgin when we got together, because he didn't pop my cherry. So I'm wondering if maybe they had a conversation years ago that maybe my ex-husband found out that I was molested by him, because it makes absolutely no sense that a 90-year-old man would say out of nowhere, I had to let Mike move in with us, otherwise he would have called the police on me.
Oh, he knew.
He must have known.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what the fuck would you say that for? And it just, you know, all this shit comes out. The secrets don't stay secret very long. And, you know, finding out things as you get older, and we were talking about this off the air, it seems to be the general age for this kind of shit to surface is the middle age. Between 45 and 55 is usually when people will start to find out about these kinds of things happening, with molestations in families, with alcoholism, being beat up. A lot of it is blocked from our memory, but as we become adults, and a lot of people will become drug addicts, they'll become alcoholics, or in my case, fuck everybody, just because that's what I thought was supposed to be my way of finding love, was not worrying about, you know, who was going to have me in the sack. If you tell me you love me, you care about me, and I really feel you do, I'm going to do that with you, because that's how I got love. I didn't know any different. Fuck, I didn't know I was molested for many years. But when the shit surfaces, it forces you to actually look at it and to see it for what it is. And then the pieces all start falling into place. And then you realize, well, shit, I didn't even have a chance as a child, right?
No. You didn't have a chance as a child.
Neither did you.
No. Didn't have a chance as a teenager or in my 20s. You know, it wasn't. And you're right. Something hits. I was 45 and I started, I really think that things start to present themselves to you when you're strong enough to handle them. And if we're lost in our 20s and our 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we went through, the first 20 years of being abused in every which way but loose by our protectors and strangers, right?
Right.
And then we get into our 40s and we really start doing the work. We start to become strong enough to really handle what your mind and your body's been protecting you of. That's when I was 45 and I started having the flashbacks. I could start to see stuff coming up and see what, some of the darker things that had happened. And I really don't think I could have handled those memories in my 20s and 30s. I was such a mess.
And you're just making your way through life.
Yeah.
Just surviving.
Like a train wreck, honestly. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine, and maybe you can speak on this, but I can't imagine anybody going through those horrific things and being spot on, on their life mission.
No, I don't think so. It's only if you have a very close-knit support system that helps get you through the crisis when it happens, then you can become that stronger person going into it. I have one friend, a gentleman who I would say he's in his 60s now. He was raised in a very spiritual environment where they talked very openly about experiences and things, and he's far more advanced than most people, at a younger age, because he had that strong support system and they talked so openly about stuff that even when bad shit happened, it wasn't tucked away. It was actually spoken about, and they talked about it and worked through it, got therapy, did a lot of, like the spiritual stuff, did a lot of that stuff at a young age. And he's so wise beyond his years because he had so many of those things going on in his formidable years that was able to help get him out of that to where it didn't stay stuck down below the recesses, because a lot of this shit stays buried deep. And I mean, you and I, with all the experiences we've been through, we didn't even realize that a lot of this stuff existed, because again, the brain is a very powerful tool. It blocks it out, it protects you. But then you have to wonder, the common denominator in all of this shit is me. It's you, it's us. What are we doing or what are we not doing? Because we're drawing these wrong occasions to us. We're drawing these bad people. We're drawing these toxic situations. And you just get fucking tired of it. It's like, well, okay, it's me. But it's not that there's something wrong with us. Bottom line, there's not something wrong with us. It's just something is missing. And the biggest thing that it is loving ourselves, because we were never taught to love ourselves.
No, because if you loved yourself in any way, shape, or form, you were full of yourself. You were stuck up.
Right, it was ego.
Yeah, you thought you were all that and a bag of chips. It's far from the case. And one thing that I've really learned through all my healing is there's two things that's missing. And the reason that you continue to go through these cycles. And one is you never were allowed to have boundaries.
Mm-hmm, true.
And you never were allowed to speak up. So if you don't know boundaries and you don't know how to use your voice, then you become subjectable to all this trash.
And something I've learned right along that line, it has a lot to do with the throat chakra.
Yes.
And when I was silenced by my parents years ago, I never understood anything about the throat chakra. But the last toxic marriage I was in, every time that man would be in my presence, especially at night when we were getting ready for bed, I would have a horrible coughing fit. You would think I'm some asthmatic or smoker. And I was not either. And I just literally would hack up a lung for 20 minutes before we would go to bed. And I didn't understand what that was, but it was actually a physical manifestation of what was going on, because I was yet in another toxic, abusive relationship that was tearing me down every day, gaslighting me, and just, it was horrendous. And then when he would leave to go to work in the morning and I would work at home, the air was clear. I never had that coughing fit until he entered my space again. And then the day that we split up and he finally moved out of the house, that coughing fit disappeared. I never had that coughing fit, and I still don't 8 years later. I've never realized until that moment, it just clicked one day. Wow, there is something to that emotional turmoil creating a physical manifestation. We don't realize just how much these things that lie below our surface can create a physical manifestation and make us sick physically. So you bring up a good point about that whole thing with them silencing your voice. You have to find that way to talk about it. It's not always going to be easy, whether you do it through therapy, you do it through listening to things like this and understanding that, you know, there's other people that have been through it. Whether you do like I do, you journal it, you put it out, put the words out, you spill it out on the paper, because I can sit here and scream it till tomorrow, whatever, I don't care, but it's still stuck there. So I have to write about it, and it purges my soul, and it's always been a good healer for me. So there's a lot of different type of healing modalities, but the first thing, you know, what do they do when you go to NA and AA? The first thing you do is stand up and say, hi, my name is such and such, and I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a drug addict. You're verbalizing it into existence, and that's the key to everything. Hi, my name is Robin. I was raped when I was 17. I was drugged and raped. My parents did nothing. Hi, my name is Robin. I was molested by my father when I was 6. My mother hid that fact when I was 8 years old and I came to her. She told me to shut the fuck up, that I was going to ruin everything for her. Now, mind you, I just found a lot of this shit out about my mother, right? But I've learned in this journey called life and the human experience to not internalize that shit, because I'm not going to let it own me.
Or kill you.
And that's exactly what it does.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that we're sitting here talking openly about these experiences is the key to everything. And I saw your face. I saw the emotions. And that's the messed up thing. A lot of people will tell you, well, you're not healed from it. You don't understand. If you've been through that journey, something that has just twisted your soul into knots, we're going to cry about it. We're going to feel the emotion when we're talking about it. That is part of the PTSD.
And the triggers.
Yes.
Yes.
You never get 100% completely over it, but you can get through it. And you can continue to help yourself live a better life and continue talking about it, freeing yourself of that bondage. Because the more and more we keep that shit below the surface and keep our mouth shut, the worse it gets for us. And it does. I'm going to say this just plain and simple, guys. Hear me when I say this. It doesn't fucking matter what anyone else thinks of you and your journey. Don't give a shit about the judgment that others may try to place on you. And remember the most important thing. Don't take it personally, because it has nothing to do with you. That is merely them projecting their own shit onto you, because they can't deal with what's going on with themselves. They're not willing to do the work for themselves. And they're going to project as much shit onto you and make you feel bad. But don't let them do that. Don't let them hold you prisoner. You need to open yourself up. And I don't care if you speak it out loud. I don't care if you write it. I don't care if you go to a therapist. I don't give a shit if you grab a pillow and go in the closet and fucking scream your head off to get it out. Don't keep that shit below the surface.
Now, if I had a dollar for every time a friend or a family member said, just get over it, it's gone, it's over, put it in the past, move forward. They don't understand the level of the trauma, the deep ingrainment of repetitive trauma. You know, it wasn't just... Not to say that any trauma is okay, but you know, it's not like a one and done situation. It's called CPTSD. It continues. It's not just one incident. It's not just two. It's not even just five. It's repetitive trauma over and over and over again. And you have triggers. You have flashbacks. It can be a smell, it can be a sound, it can be a visual. it can take you back in the snap of a finger, and you may be in a present situation where you overreact immensely because you've been triggered. Oh, she's crazy. You know, she's just crazy. That's, you know, that's just why, you know, she just overreacted. No, I just had a trigger. I just had a flashback, you know, and telling someone, get past it, it's over. That doesn't help anyone. You know, what would have happened is every time you had a trigger or a flashback, if somebody would have just hugged you and said, I know this is hard. This is hard for you. You're safe now. You're okay. Did you ever get that?
No.
I never did either.
No. I had to learn to stand before the mirror. It took me a long time to be able to stand in front of the mirror and tell me that I deserved better, to tell me that I loved myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 48 years old was I when I finally started that journey into self-love and understanding that I deserved better than what I got. I deserved better than what I allowed. Because the hardest part about this journey, and anyone who's gone through it will tell you, is taking accountability for the shit that we allow in our own lives because we didn't think we deserved any better because that's what we were told. We were told we were fucking scum, that we were, in my case, I was a whore, you know, you know, in the last year living in my environment, just the shit she has said to me, she brutally attacked me one day because I had my camera loaded up. I was going to go up to Payson and get pictures of my eagles. And she was pissed off because I was leaving the house. And she made comments to me for 20 minutes. She yelled at me. And she goes, you're not going up to Payson to take pictures of eagles. You're going up to Payson to fuck every guy in town. I know that. Oh, and by the way, when your friend came out here from New York, you guys sat in the truck outside. You gave him a blowjob. You sucked his dick and he wiped it with a towel and threw the towel out the window, which was a fucking lie. But for 15, 20 minutes, I sat there and I listened to this. And it was my wake-up call that this narcissistic mother that I've had all these years that I have so desperately tried to make a bond with, I don't have one. And that was the day that I made the decision to go completely numb with her. I don't love her. I don't hate her. I'm completely indifferent to her. I'm stuck in the living situation I am with her because I can't throw her out. You know, I've had people say, well, you own the house, you can get rid of her. And it's like, you don't understand. It doesn't work that way. You know, you got to remember, you know, plus it's elder abuse. If I even try to do something like that, the whole, you know, the other people, her friend and other family members will get on my case about it. And it's like, I don't know how much longer she has to live. So in the meantime, I have to go gray rock in my own home. I have to limit my time and space around her because everything that comes out of her mouth is negative, nasty, toxic. And I've had it out with her and told her, you know, you have to understand, you don't know me. You never got to know your daughter. You never did. So you cannot expect me to sit here in this house and be a prisoner while you have somebody keeping you company. I can't have conversations with her. If I open up about my private life, she'll run across the street. She did this when one of my friends came and picked me up. And because he had the same name as one of my coworkers, she told the neighbor that I was fucking my boss. She had the audacity to sit with me in the living room and walk up to me and say, hey, Robin, you know what? I wanted to make you look really good to the neighbors. I wanted us to be better than anybody else around here. So I went and I told the neighbor across the street, blah, blah, blah. Your boss takes really good care of you. Your boss does this, your boss does that. And I told her, I said, do you not understand that I am the studio manager? I don't really have bosses. I work with people that we all have this teamwork thing going. And the person that you saw come pick me up is a friend that I've known for 30 years. And it's not the person I work with. And I had to go over to the neighbor's house and explain to her that, you know, I'm not fucking my boss. And my mother does this deliberately. She will sit and try to talk with me to get personal information so she can go play telephone to her friend and her neighbors that I'm this bad person. And it's just stupid shit that I deal with every day, but I find a way, even more now to avoid being around her because she's not a nice person. She's nasty to me. I've told her that I can't talk to her because she's nasty to me. And anytime she does that to me, I'm going to walk away from her. I am not going to be in her space anymore where she's allowed to be that cruel to me, because it's bullshit. I'm sorry. Don't you feel any fucking thing for me? You threw one daughter away and I was supposed to be the replacement one that, you know, even her own other biological daughter she gave away said she doesn't understand why she wasn't a better mom to me. But of course, she's got that one gaslit too. I've eliminated that tie because that one tries to be the big sister to me and tell me that I'm tooting my own fucking horn because I write books and I do this show, and
you're full of yourself.
I'm not tooting my own fucking horn, God damn it. I'm sitting here fucking bleeding. I'm talking about shit that happens. If I were tooting my own horn, I'd be talking about all the cool shit I've done in this industry. But no, I'm sitting here having a conversation with you about some of the hardest things we've ever been through.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sick and fucking tired of everybody keeping the secrets.
All she knows about you is what she's projected onto you. She's done nothing but project her self-hate onto you.
Yep. And she's sitting in her karma right now.
And it's pretty deep.
Yeah. And I have tried. This is how I have tried for years. I know she reads books. That's how she gets her stuff. I have bought her so many fucking self-help books. I have tried having conversations with her. But you know what? I didn't understand for many years that she was never going to process anything because she likes being the victim. She still, after all these years, likes being the victim because it gets her attention.
But it's actually, I learned today, because, you know, we're also in a healing, you know, on a healing path. So we're not just, oh, look at us. We're so, you know, we're so sad. It's nothing like that, because I work very hard every day to, you know, heal and be a better person. So today I was advised that when you're dealing with personality disorders, it's all about their ego. And so a narcissist has a huge ego, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't have the ability to feel for you or to take accountability for anything that they've done to you, because that takes away from their ego. Then they can't be the knight in shining armor or the princess or whatever fantasy they've built about each other, when they have to stop and realize that they've destroyed their daughters.
And they don't give a shit that they did.
They don't, because it doesn't feed their ego.
No. No. And just a lot of the things she has said to me make so much sense now. And she doesn't know that I know her secret, but I know eventually she'll find out. I know her secret. She allowed her daughter to be molested so she could keep the roof over her head and not have to worry about making money. But, you know, again, like I said in the beginning, she's not going to care. She's not going to give a shit that I know the secret. But the thing is that gives me more freedom now, because I no longer have to be that savior for her. We're roommates, and that's as far as it goes. You know, where's my brother in all this? He's not going to step forward and have her move in with him.
No, he doesn't want to have to live with that.
He doesn't care. And I don't think he sees her the same way I do.
She probably didn't treat him. The female narcissist tends to glorify the man or the male son. It's that she doesn't have competition with him. She doesn't feel competitive with him. She's not jealous of him. You know, that's her boy. It's you.
Mm-hmm.
They view you as competition. They view you as, you know, something, as better than them.
Something somehow. She wished she could be.
Yeah. There's something in you that she doesn't have that she wishes she had.
My self-reliance.
Your strength.
She's never been self-reliant. She's expected everybody else to take care of her. And if I knew 8 years ago what I know now, I would have washed my hands clean of both my parents and let my brother handle it as the older brother should have. I would not have tried to, you know, she had me move in there and take over everything. And I would not have been in that position if I had known the truth if I had known about everything in my childhood. I would have just washed my hands clean of it. I would have moved over to where my son's living, and I would have been done. But unfortunately, I made that decision to try to build that bond with her, and now that bond, it's not there. It never has been, and it's tragic. It's tragic when I take a look back at my life and I see how much, and I know someone's going to say, you didn't waste time because you learned, but I wasted so many years trying to build that bond with her, trying to have a bond with her, trying to have a mom. And the thing about it is, I mean, I'm grateful you had four sisters, you know, three sisters, there were four of you, because at least you understood a little bit of what it was to have females in your life. Mm-hmm. I could never have long-lasting female relationships in my life because I always drew the wrong females to me. I never really had best friends growing up. All of them were, you know, even into my 20s, it was always guys. I could never form female relationships very well because of the lack of the one I didn't have with my mom. And I never understood why I couldn't. I never did sleepovers. I never had sleepovers at the house. Thank God, because who knows what my father might have done to those girls? Who knows? But, you know, the whole idea that the first relationship that's the most important is a mother and daughter, and I never had that. And I struggled for years trying to force it. And I thought moving in there 8 years ago to help them was going to be another chance to have that. And it's proved that it didn't. She just wanted me to move in there and give up on life and be victim sitting in the house with her so that now my father would have to deal with me and not her. And, you know,
usually it's they want to have someone to dump their anger and their self-hate and their misery on.
Yeah.
They want to, you know, unload it onto somebody. And my sister and I, we both, you know, when we lost our sister in 2018, we both witnessed our parents, you know, while she was in ICU. And you had one parent wondering where her money was going to go. And you had the other parent telling her to get the hell out of the bed and stop, you know, playing a victim and get up and get home and help her boyfriend. She was dying. So one parent's telling her, one parent's wondering where all her money's going to go. And the other parent's telling her to get home and take care of her man. Think about that. My sister and I were so angry and so upset. How can you be focused on her money? How can you be focused on whether or not her boyfriend's being taken care of? She's dying, people. And my sister and I, we just decided at that point in time that it's never going to be what we wanted. We're never going to have the mom we wanted. We're never going to have the dad we wanted. And we have to start making our own way and trying to create our own life that brings us joy. Like you and your Eagles, I also go out and take pictures. I love taking pictures of scenery and flowers and owls and ravens. And, you know, that brings me joy. You have to find what brings you joy, what brings you peace. And you have to learn to accept, and it's the hardest lesson in the whole world, that they're never going to be what you needed. And it's one of those things you can't describe. You can't describe never having what you always wanted or what you always needed. And having to decide that you're going to cut it loose and give up on it.
And, you know, that brings me to the point where I think we need to talk about what you've got going on now, because you're actually, I mean, I'm writing a book, right? Black Sheep Confessions.
Yes.
So, and we know the journey is not easy, but you're actually working on a documentary about your life so that you can show this on the big screen so that people understand that, hey, I'm not keeping my mouth shut any longer. This is the journey I was on. And maybe, just maybe, I can shed a little light in your direction and show you that you too can make it out. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I found out, gosh, with COVID and everything, I've lost so much concept of time. But I found out right in 2019 that I had to have reconstructive nose surgery. And it devastated me. It was after I had to have my neck reconstructed. My neck actually collapsed. So talk about the throat chakra, right?
Right.
It collapsed. And that was in 2014. I had to have it reconstructed. And I have a plate in the back of my neck now holding my head up.
And this was from the physical abuse.
Correct. Absolutely. And so, I was so scared about that. And I got through that. And then when they told me in 2019, the reason you have such horrible vertigo is basically because your nose is shut on the right side. It actually was, it closed. I don't know how a brake does that, but it was broken on the right side and broken at the bridge. And what was happening is my sinuses weren't draining out of the nose. They were backing up into the ear, causing the vertigo. So I was devastated to know the idea of them going into my face. It was so scary and so heartbreaking, and it triggered so many memories. It triggered how it was done. I had never been able to visualize what actually happened to me, but going into the fear of them going in released those memories. And I said, oh my God, this is the weirdest situation, to be going through this 26 years later. And that's where I told you I heard that voice. And that voice said, you need to tell your story. You went through this and you're here to help other people, and you need to tell your story. So that's when I decided to do off the floor into the mirror. And I'm hoping and I'm praying that it gets done in time for Domestic Violence Month in October this year. It's been a project that's been, we've had COVID and, other tragedies that happened within the crew. And I really hope that we can bring it out this year.
Well, it's very important that you're sharing your story in such an interesting medium, because, not all people read books.
No.
So, not all people will listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Not all people will watch movies, but the movie plays, it works a little bit better for getting stories, because then you're seeing it visually. And when you're talking about domestic violence and abuse, we've seen those kind of movies that just really draw you in. One that sticks with me is The Burning Bed with Farrah Fawcett. And that's based on a true story. The lady actually set the husband's bed on fire and took the kids and left. And we never really understand the depth of someone's pain and what they've been through. So for you actually putting it in a movie version, I think that says a lot, because I'm sure when you're working on set, I've been in film for a long time, and when you're working on set, it's a whole different environment. And to see it actually, when you're doing it, when you're involved in it, it's a good way to flush this shit out of your system. It's another cathartic journey. Am I right?
Yeah. I really, the bottom line is I just want to help people. If I can make just, and you hear this all the time, I can just help one person. I mean, I hope to help many, but I want people to, people to understand that they're not alone. I know through this journey at times how devastated and alone I've felt. It's been horrifying. You talked about contemplating suicide. That's real. That happens. You think about, I don't know if I can keep going forward. I don't know if I can keep, doing this fight. But I have such a, such a strong faith. And I really think that that's what has brought me through it all, you know, and I do get messages. And so I heard the message loud and clear, and I've, you know, said that no matter how I'm going to do this, I'm going to get this done because this is what I've been asked to do.
Well, I think you're pretty brave, especially for being here today, telling your story and talking with me about this, because every time we verbalize this, we take our power back. Every time we don't keep our mouth shut and we speak it out loud, we take our power back. And for me, 3 weeks ago in that session, the hypnotherapist had me confront my mother as the 8-year-old, but the adult guardian of the 8-year-old. And I got to verbalize exactly how I feel in the here and now and tell her what she did was wrong. By allowing the molestation to continue, she did wrong. She served me up to him on a silver platter to protect herself, and that was wrong. And as much as I was losing my shit during that, it was probably the most healing and cathartic thing I ever did, because at the very end, she had me saying these positive things about myself and to myself, that Creator loved me just the way I am and that I am loved by Creator. And I never realized how powerful those words are. And it all begins with understanding that we're not responsible for what happened. They bear the responsibility, but we are responsible to take back our life, to take back our power, to live a better life, and to say, fuck you, you're not going to hold me prisoner anymore. And what you did to me wasn't right, but I have the right to live a good, better, happy, whatever life you want to live. You don't have to be stuck in that dark cycle. You don't have to allow them to keep controlling that part of your life, because no matter what, you are an adult, you're a grown person. You now have that ability to take back your life, to take back your power, and you cannot continue down the road that you are. Just trust me when I say this. I understand how numbing works. I understand that drinking eases the pain, or whatever your vice is, whether it's alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever. I understand. Right. I understand. You and I have been there. We understand this.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We know that you can do something to numb it. But honey, you know, if you're listening to me, I don't care if you're male or female, just listen to me and understand this. There is a better life for you on the other side of this. There's a better life for you. And all it is you taking your power and your control back and not allowing what's happened to you to keep that grip on you. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to live a good life. And, you know, Tanya and I have been sitting here talking about this for a while, and I'm just hoping that at least one of you out there listening understand that you are not alone. We've all had shit and trauma happen, but you can get on the other side of this, and you can find a better life, a better way of healing. Numbing is not going to do anything for you except prolong the pain. And here's the biggest secret about everything. What's happened to you has already happened to you. It can't happen to you again. So when you're going through the healing process, it could be painful for you, but it's healing pain. It's not hurting pain. It's a different kind of pain. And if you work on healing yourself, you're going to feel so much better, and you're going to be able to get this shit out of your system and have a much better life. Wouldn't you agree?
I do. I think, again, for myself, what's helped me the most is when I've gotten into those really deep, dark places, is to know that the Creator, our Creator, loves me and never leaves me. And I'm never really alone. And I think if you get strong with your faith, It's gonna carry you through. I mean, it's really what's carried me through all of this. I don't think I could have ever made it because I didn't necessarily have the support of people in my life, but I always, always felt loved and admired and respected by Creator. I like to call him God. You may call him something else. You may call her something else. Whoever works for you. that's what's carried me through, and that's who I stick close to.
Well, I'm very proud of you for being here today. It's been an amazing conversation, a little bit of tears being shed and some emotions coming out.
Yes.
And how can people find out about your movie, and how can they support you?
The movie, we did have the movie up on Facebook, but they took it down. They didn't like the picture of me after surgery with a bandage on for some reason. I don't know. The poster, I'm like, it's not gory or anything like that. But they took the film page down. So the film page is on Instagram. It's called Off the Floor Into the Mirror. And I'm working with a really good friend on it. She's my director, and I love her dearly, and she's very good at what she does. And
she's a friend of the show.
She is.
Yes, she's done
a
show.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
And I really hope that we can get it together and get this out to everybody in October.
I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful that you chose to come on this show and share your journey with us. And I feel very honored to be one of the first people to know the story publicly. So again, thank you from the bottom of my heart and soul for being vulnerable and for sharing your time with us today.
You are so welcome. I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to tell my story and to talk about the movie. And you are so brave. And I love you.
You're going to make me cry. I love you too, lady.
I love you. I do.
Wow. What a way to end this show. Robin's got to pull it together to get out of the show. Well, guys, as always, we appreciate you listening. Please take care of yourself, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to Get Real with Robin. Join Robin Cote and her co-hosts, known as The Collective, each week as they delve into subject matters most are afraid to talk about, but really need to hear. Join us next week here on Star Worldwide Networks as we continue to Get Real.